Yeah. Well, I'm better than you are. No, you're not better. You're bigger. And uglier. And stupider.
Tim's friends giggled, and his cheeks reddened. He kicked the ball at her, hard, but missed her by several feet. The ball bounced on the curb and skidded across a strip of grass before disappearing through a line of rusting metal railings.
Now look what you've done, Tim shouted. Go and get it. Why should I get it? It wasn't my fault. I was kicking it to you.
Lucy shook her head and folded her arms across her chest, in the way she'd seen her mother do when she was insisting that they go to bed early.
You were kicking it at me, not to me, she said. You were the last to touch it. You get it.
Tim clenched his fists and took a step towards her. Lucy turned and ran, her school bag banging against her hip.
Chicken!
Tim shouted, and started making loud clucking noises. His friends joined in. Tim waited until his sister was out of sight, before ducking through the railings and sliding down the embankment. His friends followed him, shouting and screaming and flapping their arms like demented crows. The ball was at the mouth of the tunnel. Tim ran over to it and picked it up. As he bent down, he saw something a few feet inside the entrance. A blue holdall.
Hey, there's something here,
he yelled. He kicked the ball over to his friends and walked into the tunnel. He was surprised how much colder it was, and he shivered. He turned to look at his friends, as if to reassure himself that they were still there. He suddenly felt a lot less brave.
Come on,
he said, and waved them over. They ran towards him. Tim's confidence returned almost immediately, and he grabbed at the holdall, wanting to be the first to open it. The man replaced the receiver and left the call box. He slid into the passenger seat of the blue Fiat. The driver was lighting another cigarette, and the man pointedly wound down the window.
You don't mind me smoking, do you?
Asked the driver. The man shrugged, but didn't say anything. He motioned with his finger for the driver to move off. As the driver's hand reached for the gear stick, they heard a dull thudding sound off in the distance. The two men knew immediately what the noise was. They were both Belfast born and bred, and were no strangers to the sound of exploding bombs.
Jesus fucking Christ, said the man.
The cigarette dropped from the driver's lips. He fumbled for it as it rolled between his legs, cursing loudly. The man stared out of the open window, a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach. Something had gone wrong. Something had gone very, very wrong. 10 years later. It had been a long and uncomfortable flight, and Egan rubbed his knuckles into the small of his back as he waited for his luggage to appear on the carousel. The men from Beijing had booked him a first-class ticket, but Egan hadn't used it. People were noticed in first class, and Egan had gone through most of his life without being noticed. That was the way he wanted it. His features could best be described as nondescript. He was in his early 30s, a little below average height, with receding hair, cropped short. He had pale blue eyes and a squarish face, with thin lips that formed an almost straight line unless he smiled. The only distinguishing features Egan had were concealed by his dark blue suit. There was a thick scar that ran from the base of his neck to just above his left breast, a phosphorus burn on his right thigh, and two old bullet wounds in his right shoulder. Anyone who saw Egan naked would never forget the man, but most people would have difficulty describing him an hour after meeting him. Egan's suitcase was as bland as he was, a grey Samsonite with an Air France tag. He picked it up and walked through customs. Egan had started his journey in London, but had taken the Eurostar train to Paris and flown out of Charles de Gaulle Airport. The flight to Hong Kong had taken a little under 12 hours, and he'd spent most of the time reading A Tale of Two Cities. He was working his way through the complete works of Charles Dickens and hoped to have finished by the end of the year. As he walked out into the arrivals area, he saw a liveried chauffeur holding a piece of white card with Mr. Egan written on it. Egan shuddered. He knew that his employers were trying to impress him and that face was all important to the Chinese, but Egan had no wish to be impressed. He considered ignoring the chauffeur, but decided not.